Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10. The pass is deep to his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has got Pat Greenan, 22 to Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? It is Monday morning. This is Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Rajah Bell. We got a big show to get to, a ton of stuff, a huge weekend. We had a huge trade in baseball. We almost had a Malice in the Palace situation in Jacksonville. A ton of stuff. The NFL clearly dominated the news. But first, how are you feeling, man? Because you were out Friday, had the flu.
Yeah.
You were puking all night, but you're good now?
I am. I don't think it was a flu. I think it was like one 24-hour like stomach bug. But yeah. It was brutal.
It was brutal.
And then I had a brutal weekend on top of it, like energy-wise. So
right.
I'm hanging on by a thread right
do you
now.
Ever, do you feel – so you were puking, right?
Oh, both ends.
Did you ever feel – so I've – thanks. I don't know if we needed to know that. But there's sometimes there's a feeling that I get when I get sick, and I don't – I puking is probably my worst – like I cannot stand more than anything in life. You said, what do you not want to do? It's throwing up, right? But after it's all said and done – there's a part of me that's like, man, my abs look pretty good. I'm a little sore.
Honestly, because I started dieting and doing the Orange Theory about 2 weeks ago, and I got a little kickstart, a little helper.
Yeah. See? It's like a cleanse. Yeah. It was like a cleanse, one way to do it. All right, so you're back now. It's good because I had to do this show solo. It was not the same without
me?
You. I did. So, but it was good. It's good to have you back. All right, man, let's get into it because the NFL was crazy, probably the best weekend of action that we had all season long. So let's do like we do every Monday, start it off with what we learned.
We've got a lot to cover and time is short.
All right, the Philadelphia Eagles went to L.A. in what seemed like a home game for them. We learned not much about the game itself, but we learned that unfortunately for the NFL, injuries continue to define this NFL season.
Yeah, that really sucks.
Eagles are reporting it is a left knee injury. He is done for today. We do not know the severity of the knee injury. But I can tell you, as I was standing back by that Eagles locker room, all the support staff that was back there with Carson Wentz all walked out just shaking their head.
That was Aaron Andrews. Brutal, brutal news for the Philadelphia Eagles as Carson Wentz goes down with what they're expecting to be an ACL. I don't think you've ever seen one where they said, oh, it's not as bad as you think. Anytime they test the knee out and it's there, they just know. It's the MRI formalizes things. But you saw it. You said it real quick. It does suck.
Yeah, it sucks. You know, it's just such a fragile thing, right? Like that health, every team that wins a championship, when people ask me like what the recipe for it is, like clearly you got to be a good team. But there's a lot of luck involved with teams that win championships. And a big part of that luck is avoiding the injury bug, and especially to a player that's as important as Carson Wentz. And, you know, I had never really sat and really, really watched him. Like, I watch football kind of like red zone now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'll watch the red zone before I watch a full game. So I'm not really getting to watch a guy, you know, through 3-4 quarters of football. I mean, he's fantastic. Like, he's a bad man. Like, just – you know, really good in the pocket, never really seems to get rattled. And then he's got this elusiveness, kind of like a la Russell Wilson. Like, he's got some escapability where he can get outside the pocket and make plays there, too. And, you know, I know you plug in Nick Foles, and he's had some great seasons, but I don't think you overcome an injury like that.
Yeah, I think they still have a chance. I felt like they were – and I felt like this team was the best team in the NFC, in a really crowded NFC where there's a lot of good teams. I agree with you. I mean, the season that he's having, 33 touchdowns, only 7 interceptions, it leads the NFL. But I don't think it's devastating for them. And I think all you have to do is look across the NFC and look at the Vikings, who are the team they're competing with for that top spot, and look at what they're doing with Case Keenum. Like, Case Keenum, if you would have said coming into the season, who would you rather have as a backup, Case Keenum or Nick Foles?
Yeah.
I think you might go with Nick Foles. Mm-hmm. He showed you in 2013, he had 27 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions, one of the best seasons. Like, it's one of the craziest anomalies in all of football history. Like, the guy that could come out and have that type of year and then kind of fall off the map again and become this career backup that he's become. But what impressed me more than that was what he did yesterday when he came in the game, because there was no drop off. I thought Doug Peterson showed a ton of confidence in. There was a 3rd and 8 late in the game when a lot of teams would have ran it and said, hey, defense. He completed the pass in a tight window. So I don't think they're going to be as bad off as people think they're going to be. Now, obviously, it's a huge drop. I mean, Carson Wentz is having a phenomenal season. This team is built around him. The mobility thing is interesting, though, because one of the biggest knocks on him when he runs around is he's got to protect himself. Now, I don't think you could have done anything. I thought that was that's a play. If there's a touchdown on the line, you kind of risk it.
You gotta go
get
it.
Take that dive. And it didn't look that bad. The way it was kind of sideways hit, but watching it live, it was a full speed collision. You're like, whoa!
It was like the Willis McGahee shot in the Fiesta Bowl, but not to the degree. Like you had one defender coming in one way and the other, and you could just see the knee just wiggle a little bit. And I mean, you know, your dad was an orthopedic surgeon. Like that's all it takes for that ACL to go. The reason I think that they don't overcome the loss of Wentz now, it's not because I don't think Nick Foles is capable, but there's timing involved with injuries like that. And so you alluded to the Minnesota Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
That happened in the preseason.
Yeah.
Like they knew that they were going in with Case Keenum. There were time for the troops to rally around him, relationships to be built. And I know Nick Foles is already there in Philadelphia, so he knows everybody, but there is some wind that is taken out of your sails when that happens to you at this point in the season. Like you're in the last stretch. You've already formulated this mental picture of what this looks like. Like you already see yourself playing in these playoff games. Like you've already got, you know, you visualize these NFC championship games with Carson Wentz. There's a lot to be said for losing him at this point in the season.
We did it at rehearsals. It was going to be a weekly segment. Should they sign Colin Kaepernick? And it'll come up because they're going to sign some probably guard. Like they'll sign somebody off the street that's not very good. I don't think it'll be Colin Kaepernick.
It will not be Colin Kaepernick. So, breaking news. It'll Eagles do not sign Colin Kaepernick.
All right, that's it. You heard it here first. That's our news right there. They will not.
Should have had a job already. Like I've been on record with that. Like,
yeah.
I think it's a ridiculous, you know, it's a ridiculous thing at this point, but the writing's on the wall. They're not signing Colin Kaepernick.
No, no doubt. All right.
Sudfeld, their third stringer, are now back up.
Sweet. Right. Good
luck
for you,
with that.
Nick Sudfeld.
They'll bring in somebody else that's out there. All right. All right, next up, the Jacksonville Jaguars playing at home. The Seahawks come to town. They dominated most of this game, and we learned that the Jags are a very real threat in the AFC. Blake Bortles had a really good game, but the unfortunate story coming out of this one was not what happened on the field, but what happened off the field after it and at the latter portions of the game.
And they need to get somebody from the Seattle staff to walk Quentin Jefferson into the locker room.
And look, somebody threw something at him from the stands and it landed out. Security needs to take care of this to make sure fans should not throw things. Those fans will be ejected.
So I was watching this live. I was watching Red Zone, and it was coming down to the wire. I actually had taken the Jags to win at home, so there was a vested interest in this one.
Right, right.
But it was getting chippy. These guys were talking all game. The Jaguars are a young team who like to talk a lot of trash. Seahawks, same boat. They got a lot of guys who like to talk. This is a heated rivalry that's becoming that way. These teams do not like each other. Michael Bennett takes a low blow. So some of this stuff had spilled over late in the game. And then when Quentin Jefferson gets tossed, he's walking over the side, and you heard Merrill Hodge recapping in the game. Some fans start throwing stuff at him, and he almost goes in the stands. And when it was going, I was wondering if he really had intent to go in the stands or if he was just trying to scare somebody.
Yeah.
But he did look like one of those moments where you just lose where you are, like, oh, I'm in the NFL. I can't just go brawl these fans. I couldn't tell if he had completely lost it.
Oh, he lost it.
So you think he was ready to go?
Yeah, he was ready to go.
He was ready to throw down.
When you're, look, the NBA is a little different because the fans are like right there.
Yeah.
Like, and I could really smack you if I wanted to. Speaking of which, just a little side story. We were at Arkansas State. This was probably 1998. And, you know, one of these young dudes is there heckling us in pregame warmups. And the stands are about, like, you know, 5 feet high. And he's leaning over, just talking all kind of recklessness, you know, to FIU. And one of my teammates said, "You say again, I'm going to smack you." And the little dude thought it was a joke. And he ran his mouth again. And Darius Cook, God bless his soul, walked right over to him and smacked the fire out of him in a layup line at Arkansas State. So here's my point. I've seen people lose it. He had clearly lost it. Fans, I get that you pay your money to come to the game and you have a right to say whatever you want to say. And as players, you know, we for the most part have to take it. It is our right, however, to say something back if we choose to. We take the fine or suspension or whatever comes with it, but we have the right to do that. Once a fan becomes physical and you put my health in jeopardy by throwing an object at me on the field, you should be obligated to come down and fight me.
Like, I think that's a good policy.
Find the fan.
Yep.
Like, go get him. Like, don't send him to jail. Don't put him underneath the bowels of the stadium and let him get bailed out in an hour.
Right.
And he gets to go home and brag. Oh, I threw a bottle at Danny Cano. Bring his ass down on the field and let him scrap.
Yep.
Like, that should be – if you have balls enough to throw something at somebody at their workplace, a projectile like that, come down and fight the man.
I think you got a great idea. I think they could even put a two box, like double box, like keep that fight. The game's going on. More people would be watching the double box in the side with a player fighting the fan. I do sometimes wish they would let the players go. Because some of these fans, they get, it's kind of like Twitter, the Twitter heroes, the Twitter muscles, people flex.
Yeah.
Because they know there's no chance you can go do anything to them. So the fans are up there throwing stuff because they know, oh, he can't do anything. Now you might get kicked out of the stadium, but this is no big deal. Their game was over. Like, you're getting ready to leave anyway. I am with you. I think they should let him go. And I would love to see those fans who think they're all, you know, they're the hero in the stands, see their face when they actually had to deal firsthand with a 300-pound defensive lineman coming at them. There was – see, the unfortunate thing about this was that after the game, Michael Bennett, some other players were actually saying that some of the fans were throwing the racial slurs at him. And that, to me, if you get caught – if somebody – and trust me, there are people around that can hear it. If he's yelling at the player and he hears on the field, I think you should not only get tossed out of the stadium, I think you should lose your tickets, if you have season tickets, banned from the stadium. Like, that to me is unacceptable. And that's one where I get it. Like, if Quentin Jefferson wants – like – go ahead. If somebody says throws around the N-word in an NFL game, like, get them out. Kick them out. Like, they should not be allowed back into any other NFL game.
Right. I agree with you 100%. And having played and been, like, the villain on most teams that I was on, I've heard just about everything.
Yeah.
And in a much closer proximity than NFL fans. And what I always say to people, because I never really had issues with going into the stands, like, I've had a few verbal exchanges. There's a line that's crossed. Like, I've heard everything there is under the sun to hear. Like, same with most of these NFL pros. So when you see one of them bug out like that, it's something different.
Right.
Like, they get this week to week. So when you see one of them have a gut reaction and the head snaps and they're ready to do something, you know someone has crossed a line and it's something that they don't hear on a week-to-week basis. So I to your point and to their point, I firmly believe that someone was up there tossing around some you know, colorful language as it pertained to race or what have you. Like, but there are lines that are crossed by fans, and because there are no real ramifications for fans and they buy these tickets, you know, they think it's all well and good. Here's the deal. My job says I'm not allowed to do it, right?
Yeah.
But if I want to do it and I want to face the suspension or whatever, you better have your ass prepared.
So I got one up for you. You were talking about when you were playing at FIU.
Yeah.
When I was at Florida State, Sean Jackson, running back, bad dude, great dude, but he was one dude you didn't want to mess with. We were playing in Chapel Hill, and some dudes were sitting. It was kind of close. It's like the first row, and they're not that far. It didn't have the huge wall that Jefferson had to go up in there. Some dudes were heckling him the whole game. All of a sudden, I look back, and I see this, like, frat bro. In, like, Carolina blue football jersey. Yeah. I look back, and he's holding his chin. He's, like, holding his face, and he's bleeding from the lip. Sean Jackson had gone up to him and punched him.
And
he got, like, it was messed up. He shouldn't have ever done it. But with probably what was said. But it was one of those things. It was like, And everybody, like, it's funny because I think Quentin Jefferson and the Seahawks going back are probably have his back. They're like, you should have gone up there. You should have done that. Same way when I was at Florida State, we were like, we had his back. Like, you should have done that. If the guys are heckling you, every once in a while, it's probably acceptable.
Yeah.
All right. So that's what you learned from us. We think you should be able to go get them in the stands. That's our philosophy.
Raja's implemented like 10 rules through 10 episodes. So we have a segment called Raja Rules now.
Which would save the NBA, save the NFL, save any other college football. We'll save all the sports.
Can I qualify my NBA one? Because I heard there was a little bit of beef. It was sexist because they're not 6'3 women. So
there are.
I agree that there are. But having said that, maybe for women we make it like 5'8", like 5'9", like, you know, just
tall,
you know, above your average height.
All right, sounds good. All right, next up. The Packers, who I think most people had written off, all of a sudden moved to 7-6, still have a shot at the playoffs. No Aaron Rodgers, no problem. He practiced all week, but that was a huge game, a huge win for them.
And they're going to throw it. Who has a dangerous throw, and it's a first down!
The Browns jumped out early, and people were trolling the Packers saying, oh, how are you going to lose this game? And then they came roaring back. Since Aaron Rodgers has been out, they've been 3-4, two straight overtime wins. Mentioned Brett Hundley real quick when we were coming into that highlight. He goes off, 265 yards passing, three touchdowns. To me, I think you're seeing the emergence of a young quarterback who I loved at UCLA. Now, he dropped in the draft. I think he ended up going in the fifth round. He didn't have the top-tier arm strength, and his senior year didn't live up to the hype, kind of the expectations that people thought. But he's been in the perfect situation watching Aaron Rodgers. They have a really good relationship. He's learned behind him. And he's done exactly what you would need from him. Kind of keep them afloat, get them to a position where now Rodgers, who practiced with the scout team all week, if he gets back, this team could make a run.
Yeah, good for you, Brett Hundley. And I didn't see the game, but I had made the comment a few weeks ago, like it didn't look like they trusted him. Mm-hmm. So my question is like the 25 or the 35 or 46, which are great.
Yeah.
Like, were they just dinking dunks and there was a bunch of run after catch, or was he actually –
A lot of them, no, but here's the thing. Mike McCarthy's offense is a lot of different.
No, I know.
Yeah, but it's similar to Andy Reid, what he gets crushed for, and Aaron Rodgers. Like, even the last play, the play of the Devontae Adams,
yeah.
It was a bubble-like screen pass. It was thrown behind the line of scrimmage, and then he goes for 30 yards. It's the design of the system. The most important thing you want to do in this one is have high completion percentage, which he did, 35 of 46, and you don't want to throw turnovers. You don't want to throw interceptions. And I think part of the process with Mike McCarthy is figuring out what Brett Hundley likes, like what plays does he like.
Right.
Everybody's different. When you have Aaron Rodgers, he's probably going to override the coach sometimes and call what he wants to. But I see this team, and I think they're a legitimate shot. The biggest problem is they face the Panthers, who are in a similar place, playing for this NFC wildcard spot, and the Panthers look pretty dang good.
Yeah, so here's my thing with Aaron Rodgers, and obviously it's not even a question that if he's healthy and you have a chance to make the playoffs, you go for it, you play him. Healing bones are tricky, because if they're slightly healed and you come down on it again, it could re-shatter on you, and you play two really gangster like defensive lines. The Panthers get after you. They get after you, and so do the Vikings the week after that. Like, those are two pretty good defenses. So that'd just be something to look for with Aaron Rodgers coming back. You would hope, like, if I'm a GM or if I'm an organization in that position, I would hope that I get some less heralded defenses to bring him back, just to make sure that he's not taking shot after shot after shot. But
have you ever done a collar? Have you ever heard a collarbone? Or
No.
I never did either, because I think it's a really tricky one, as you said, where it's healing back together, and you might feel great, and he's practiced with scout team, but you never truly know if it's 100% until you fall on it with a 300-pounder on it. And you're going to – like, we saw Tony Romo deal with that, where, he thought he was back, and then he goes right back to the injured reserve because you think you're healthy, and you can't really test it. And I don't even think there's a way with an MRI or an X-ray to go look at it and tell. It's just you're gonna kind of have to roll the dice.
The only way you test that is like you lay him down and you drop a sandbag on his opposite shoulder and see if it can withstand the weight.
And then if it hurts again, then you're really screwed. All right, you mentioned it real quick. The other thing we learned is that the Panthers are just as good as we thought they were. And Cam Newton goes off. He can still get it done in the fourth quarter. A crazy play he had.
Newton, wide open. Newton, inside the 40, inside the 20, 62 yards, Cam Newton.
So that, of course, was the Carolina Panthers, Cam Newton. They beat the Vikings in a critical NFC matchup. And I don't know if you saw that run, but Cam Newton, it's funny because he got to the linebacker level, and he didn't make like a Barry Sanders type move or an Adrian Peterson type move. He kind of just made a one cut and juked the other way, and he was gone. And it doesn't look super fast, but obviously it's super effective.
That's unfair. No, it's unfair for a dude to be that big and that damn fast. Was that a zone read? Like, what would you describe that play as? I mean, he had it. It looked like he rode with his running back for a second.
Yes,
like,
it was.
That's
it was
an iteration of the zone read, right?
Yes, yes.
All right, if any of the Western Warriors, peewee coaches are listening, please run
that's
the
your
damn,
son squad.
Please run the zone read, because he's not Cam Newton in size and stature, but he throws and he runs. And probably at that age, the best part of his game are his legs. So if you're listening, just side note, go ahead and put that in. What was I going to say? I hate watching Cam Newton play.
Why?
Because I love Cam Newton. Like, I love Cam Newton.
So why do you not like him play?
Because
that's 62-yard play.
He looks so bad throwing the ball sometimes. Like, his numbers are so bad. And I asked you this a week or so ago. Like, why are they so ugly to watch?
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not a quarterback guru or anything like that. But he just looks like he doesn't have, true, solid fundamentals when he's throwing the ball. He's on his back foot half the time. He's just relying on straight, this cannon that's on his shoulder. He reminds me of a dude, and I said it a few years ago about LeBron, before like LeBron has made an effort, and I hate to cross over into basketball. But
no, bring it. I was going to do it.
You can see him round out his mid-post game. Mm-hmm. He's much more efficient from the three-point line. Like, he's made strides in fundamental things that can help, you know, the longevity of his career and help him be more efficient. Like, he's a student of the game. And I felt for a while he may be relying on just purely being gifted as the best athlete in that sport. And I feel like Cam does that at times, and that frustrates me watching him play.
You are 100% right. I think Cam Newton is the most gifted quarterback for sure, and maybe the most gifted physically player in the entire NFL. There's some other freaks on defense, right, and there's some other players at wide receiver that are extremely gifted. So no doubt the quarterback position. I think he is. When I watch him play, he reminds me of LeBron physically. Like, I think, and LeBron, when you watch him play in the NBA, separate, like, he looks different than everybody else.
Right.
I think Cam Newton looks the same way. When he can make grown men look like he's playing against college players or high school players, I think you see a difference. Here's the difference. I love that LeBron wants to be the best ever. And I love the fact that he picks facets of his game and goes back and says, all right, I'm going to go back to the basket now. I'm going to work on that one year. He's going to work on his mid-range shoot. Later, he's been working on his three-point shooting. He always has something what he wants to work on. I don't see Cam Newton making any effort to work out those kinks in his fundamentals. He has never he's always relied on that physical talent. And he's never worked on his skill set and his craft at saying, all right, I have all these abilities. Let me become now the best passer. Now, he's put it together at some times in the fourth quarter. He'll have great fourth quarters, his MVP season. He had his best passing statistics. But he should be incrementally improving every single year. And even yesterday was a good example. He was only 13 to 25 for 137 yards, a touchdown and interception. You've got to be able to do more than that if you want to win a Super Bowl. I think he showed us he can carry this team to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, for sure. But that, I mean, so you just summed up why I'm so frustrated watching them, because I want him to take that next step. A talent like that, if you take a tool and sharpen it, and he's an instrument, he's a tool.
Yeah.
Like, sharpen that skill set, bro. So, like, you know, you can do what you should do. Like, I could make the argument that they may be underachieving. Like, when you're, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you have the ability to do that with your legs. You're 13 for 25. What if you were 19 for 25 for 240 yards on top of that? It would be, you know.
Trust me, I was in an Uber in Charlotte when I was up at the ACC championship game when Miami played Clemson. I was in an Uber and a guy was asking me about Cam Newton. And he said, he's like, I don't think he cares about being the greatest. I think he's worried about what he's going to wear. And it sounds corny, but I think he puts more effort into his wardrobe than he does in his craft. And that is a problem.
Wow.
And I think he's a competitor, like when he's on the field.
Yeah.
But what separates the greatest of all time to be a GOAT is wanting to put in the work in the offseason. I don't think he wants it yet.
Let's get to that work, Cam.
Yeah, exactly. All right, moving on. Last night, incredible game capped off.
And I think he's a competitor.
Ooh, what do we have there? A little shake up there, a little echo to it. Let's get to last night. The Steelers, a crazy game against the Ravens. And much like Cam Newton, we learned the Steelers know how to finish games as well.
Roethlisberger deep down the right sideline. Antonio Brown. He's amazing.
So the Steelers, who I think we talked about it earlier this season, I thought they were a team that was about to implode. They had the controversy with the anthem. They had Antonio Brown the following week throwing water coolers.
Yeah.
Big Ben coming into the season was already talking about retirement, back-to-back seasons. Now they're out there. What are they, 8 wins in a row? I think they've rattled off. They are an offensive juggernaut. Defensively, if they struggle like they did last night, giving up 38 points, they have enough firepower. I'm starting to think maybe the Steelers are the best team in the AFC.
Wow. Like the best team or the best
over
team
the
besides
Patriots.
The Patriots?
No, I'm looking at them. Now, I would, if you had, they put, because they look like they're on this you know,
collision course
to face the Pats in the AFC championship game. They got a lot of weapons. A lot of weapons. And Tom Brady, as great as he is, he does not have – like, I'm thinking about Ben, thinking about retiring. I'm like, is he nuts with those players he's throwing to?
Yeah, that's crazy. He does have a bunch of weapons, right?
Yeah.
And
guess what? We get to see him next week.
See, the Pats are giving up, like, 8 points a game, though, over this, like – what is it, like 4 or 5-game stretch? I don't know what it is, but I saw the stat this morning. I think it's, like, 4 or 5 games, 8 points a game. And that's a defense that, beginning of the season, we were like, hey – it's over. Like, their defense is ridiculous. They're giving up, you know, they're last in the league defensively. So I think they've got some things figured out. The same thing that hurts the Steelers in terms of, you know, Mike Tomlin, mm-hmm, being a player's coach, letting guys maybe get away with a little bit more personality than another coach would. Like those things, when things aren't going well, can fester and become water coolers kicked and, you know, press conferences where I might throw you under the bus and stuff like that. Those are the same things that allow people to really become a family and a brotherhood. Like you get to vent those things. You get to be a personality and I get to know you. They're the same things that when things go bad at times, that, you know, we can figure it out together. Do you know what I mean? Like we're now brothers. We all know each other. We're not just there in a company setting, doing our company role, walking the company line. We are actually bearing soul. Like I get to know you. I get to know what makes you tick. I get to know what makes you angry. And like if you've ever had brothers or you grew up in a big family, it's not always great. Like people are going to argue. People are going to beef. Like my dad and I are getting into a fight, but I still love him.
Yep.
2 weeks later, we're father and son again, and we're inseparable. And so, you know, that's what I see. They've kept most of their players together. There's not a whole lot of turnover there in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And these people, they're themselves. They know each other, and they withstood the storm. And I see, you know, they're stronger on the other side because of it.
You hit on something. I forgot about Martavis Bryant, the man in a trade. And then, you know, Ben's asked about him, and they're talking about it. That was one more thing. I think the difference in – or the key to having a team like that, where it is family and you can have disagreements, is veterans. You got to have a guy like James Harrison, who's not messing around with anybody.
True.
Like, he doesn't even hardly talk to the media. Or Ben Roethlisberger on the other side of the ball. Like, you have a really strong leader – and on both sides of the ball. You got guys like Ryan Shazier, who, you know, is still in a hospital now. They dedicated the win to, which was a really emotional moment when they're FaceTiming with him in the hospital and showing him. I think that, to me, might be the reason why the Patriots are able to beat them in a shootout, because he's going to be a critical loss for that defense to overcome if they get there.
Is there a status on him yet? Like, I found myself, my wife was asking me, and
no,
I decided.
No, yeah, it is one. I think he had the surgery last week, and he's still in the hospital. And they've been, the doctor's been very... and on purpose, so they don't want stuff to get out.
Sure,
they want to set expectations
to.
Yeah, they have not.
I mean, but has it been clarified? I don't even care about football, but is it clarified? Will he walk? Like, is he?
That's the kind of. I think so, but I am not 100% sure. They're trying to figure it out, and that's really scary. I mean, that's one of those moments when it becomes way bigger than football when you're talking about it. All right, next up. There it is. A little delayed. That was like the hard count. That was like the one to get him to jump off sides. The Buffalo Bills and Colts, a game that really, I mean, the Bills are still kind of trying to make a late season run, but not a lot to this game other than the conditions, which was a blizzard storm out there. And listen to LeSean McCoy had the overtime winning run.
Here's McCoy breaking a tackle. McCoy into the end zone, and Buffalo wins it.
All right, so we learned that snow games are a lot of fun to watch. I get on TV, it's a great product. Like, my girls, my daughters don't love watching football with me.
Yeah.
But I was like, you got to see this. Like, the guys are going, they're, you know, making snowmen or snow angels after the field, after the plays. They're tackling, and it looks like they're going underneath the snow.
Right.
I thought it was crazy because usually they do a pretty good job of, like, sweeping the field, or they have the blowers that'll get it off.
Yeah.
It was starting to get up there where it was slowing them down.
Yeah, it looked like
except for LeSean McCoy.
It was like a foot of snow.
Yeah.
It did look like a fantastic, like, it's one of those things where you, on TV, you look like you want to play in it, but you don't really want to play in it. Like, you ever been out in the snow and you're playing out there for like an hour and you come in and like, you try to get warm with some warm water and now your feet and your hands are like burning and they're swollen. That can't be fun for the players. But having said that, Slim Shady, like, you need to go have your reps go to, like, Dairy Queen, like, and get you, like, a Blizzard sponsorship, because he's, like, the king of Blizzard games.
Yeah.
Right? He just goes to work in snow blizzards.
Yeah, he had 32 carries, 156 yards, and the game-winning touchdown. And, oh, by the way, also against the Lions in 2013, another Blizzard game, he had 29 carries, 217 yards, and 2 touchdowns in that one. So he's, you know, they have like the horses at the track. And he's a mudder, or he's a guy that runs well.
Yeah,
the wet
he's
track.
A snower.
He's a snower. That's what he is. Absolutely.
You take like a caricature of Slim Shady, right? And you hold him above the blizzard, and you just have his legs start going like an old like cartoon, and you drop him in the blizzard, and they stir it up.
Yeah.
And they hold it upside down.
There it is.
We'll work on a video for that for @Cannell and Bell.
Nice.
All right. Yeah. Nice. I like that. So I got to play. I didn't get to play him when I was a backup in one of those when I was on the Broncos.
Yeah.
I thought this was really messed up, though, because my wife and I had just gotten engaged at the time.
Okay.
And it was kind of a snowy day in Denver, all day snow. Like, it was just – it was coming down the entire day. It was a night game. I think it was Sunday night or Monday night football. We're playing the Raiders, big rivalry game. Everybody's talking about it. We had a good team. And I'm like, my wife would usually go to the games. I'd be like, are you going to go to the game?
Right.
And she looked at me and kind of hesitated. And I was like, wait a second. She's like, well, if you were playing, I would go. She's like, but you're not. You're kind of a scrub. So I'm going to sit here. So literally, she sat at home in front of the fireplace.
And I
had
like
a gorgeous
style.
Condo. You could see the stadium. And she told me after the fact, she's like, if something would have happened and you would have gone in, yeah, I would have come to the game, because it was like 10-minute ride.
Right.
I was like, there was no chance she was moving from that couch in front of the fireplace. No chance she was doing
How
that.
How late did you have – was that a fun environment? Being there –
oh, loved it. Yeah.
You
and
did?
It was great as a backup because I had the jacket on and I had the –
yeah, you were
like,
warm.
The heated benches and everything. So I was just fine. There are different types of conditions and different types of snow. And there can be very dry snow where it doesn't affect the football.
Right.
Then it's a ton of fun. The thing when it gets hard, and this is a quarterback's worst nightmare in any condition, it's when it gets slippery, because then you can't grip the football.
Yeah.
Although now with gloves, the technology in gloves is insane, because they're sticking now almost to the point. All right, go ahead.
It is a beef with mine. Yeah. I didn't play like that. Like, I didn't play football. My dad played football, but – like, catching the ball is an art. Like, it's your hands. You have to learn how. The gloves now they're basically stick 'em, like, for your hands. That is, it should be illegal. I don't even know what to say other than that. It's ridiculous. These things are so tactified that you can, if you drop a ball with those gloves on, you need not be in the NFL.
You are right. It bothers me, too. I think the NFL, because stick 'em used to be an unfair advantage. These are more effective than stick 'em.
Right.
The gloves that they have nowadays. So all these one-handed grabs that you're seeing, very often I leave unimpressed. Now, Odell Beckham makes it with three fingers. It's like, I don't care about the gloves. Like,
right,
they're still
correct.
Going. But a lot of these catches that you see one-handed grabs, I'm with you. It's an unfair advantage.
They're like magnets.
Yes, it's an unfair advantage. All right, let's do – we got a lot of stuff we learned from the NFL. Let's do some stuff from baseball. So we're talking baseball with Rajah Bell. It's my favorite topic.
Baseball.
So, of course, we're in the offseason. Side note, I was at the New York City airport last night at JFK flying back here. Ran into Aaron Boone. Shout out to Aaron Boone,
who
is the brand new manager of the New York Yankees. Talked to him. We used to see each other at ESPN a lot. First thing I said to him was, man, you got to be pumped up, because first of all, you're named the manager of the New York Yankees,
right,
one of the premier franchises in all of sports. But then not only that, you had a pretty stacked team, and they just became one of the toughest lineups as far as offense goes in the history of Major League Baseball, because you're going to add Giancarlo Stanton from the Marlins. And by the way, this type of money is silly money. $295 million contracts he's got over the next 10 years. The Yankees are going to pick up $265 million of that. Giancarlo Stanton had a ton of leverage because he had a no-trade clause in there, so they wanted to move him to the Giants. Cardinals probably would have gotten more for him. And he's saying, no, I don't want to go play in St. Louis. I don't want to go to St. I want to go to a premier market. So he says Dodgers or Yankees. And the Yankees are the ones that end up doing it. This lineup is going to be a super team. Basically, what you're seeing are the Warriors of Major League Baseball.
So just a refresher, this is the sport where they like take the ball, they throw it in the goal with the stick? No, I'm just right? I'm not a baseball fan. I watch the playoffs. When you put together a lineup, like, because I watch for home runs.
Yeah.
I'm not a purist, so I don't watch for pitching battles and like hot corner stops at third base and like double plays. I watch for bombs. I watch for guys getting up there and knocking it out of the park. And I don't know if it's legal. This shouldn't be legal. Like in the NBA, like you got to devise a super team, but there is like caps involved. Like, so guys you have to take a little bit less. I got to take a little bit less.
Right.
You know, Debo's got to take a little less. Like, you can just, because of the Yankees, and you got to explain it to me, like, because you can afford and you've got all this money and you're like the number one franchise in the world, possibly, like, you can just get whoever the hell you want. You can pay any amount of money to have whoever
spend
you want.
Spend away. Now, they got some taxes.
There is a luxury tax.
Yeah, they got luxury tax.
Right.
Yeah, but the Yankees are like, who cares?
Who cares about it?
Right, we'll just cut those checks left and right. Now, it's the interesting thing about this is Derek Jeter, the new owner of the Marlins.
He's getting killed.
Well, see, I was in New York. Again, I was in New York for the Heisman doing some work up there, and I was watching local New York coverage. And by far, the consensus opinion was Derek Jeter just got fleeced by Brian Cashman, the GM who was the GM while he was there,
right,
saying they got the best of this deal. And it's true, because Jeter really had no leverage, because Stanton was saying, I'm only going to two places.
Right. That hurt Jeter. But what people here believed from the jump, like the people that were realists, was that he was going to come in and strip this thing down to its bare bones anyway. Because
right,
his group, apparently, like, to not know baseball, I know a little bit, but they didn't have the pockets to be able to keep up what's going on with the Marlins right now. So they had to dump a bunch of salary and essentially start from scratch. So having said that, it really didn't matter what he got for Giancarlo. He just needed to get rid of Giancarlo and the $296 million.
All right, let's get to something you're familiar with.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah, what?
It's the topic. No, because not that you're not familiar with baseball. You just did an excellent breakdown of the Florida Marlins, Miami Marlins. Flopping. It's been something. There are actually videos out there. People on YouTube have created videos, mashups of you doing various floppings.
Yeah, the Rajah flop.
Yeah, the Rajah flop.
Yeah, the Mavs did one.
Yeah, the Rajah flop. Now, Boogie Cousins is not a fan of flopping. He had some thoughts on it as he put a, he had a monster game the other night, 40 points, 22 rebounds against the Nuggets. But post-game, he was upset about Mason Plumlee, who is a pretty good flopper in his own right. He never even made contact with him. It was one of those air flops. It was pretty bad. So Boogie Cousins said after, it kind of sucks. The competitive spirit of basketball is slowly leaking out. Taking pride in one-on-one defense is slowly leaking out. It's more about selling calls and flopping, so you just kind of ignore the BS and just play your game. Is he right?
He did the Rajah flop.
The Rajah flop. That's the Rajah flop right there.
Mark Cuban and the Mavs should have been fined for that. Can we retroactively go back and find
them
for that?
No, that's outstanding.
Look, Boog, there is some flopping going on in the NBA.
Yeah.
However, I did take a lot of pride in my individual man-to-man defense. Like, that's what I did. They're different kind of flops. Like, I was never a guy – if you didn't make contact with me, like, I wasn't a guy – trying to get you kicked out of a game for throwing an elbow that you didn't hit me with. Like, I wouldn't flop. But, you know, my argument to a ref was always, if a guy hits me in the chest squarely, why can't I go down? Like, if he illegally, you know, hits me in the chest and I'm in a legal guarding position, I'm allowed to go down. It doesn't make it a flop. Like, there was enough contact there. Who is deciding how much force I have to stay there and take a hit with? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, sure, I could not ever fall down if I didn't want to fall down. That doesn't mean it wasn't an offensive foul. So given enough contact, as a defender, I have to go down. Otherwise, I'll never get a call. I don't see that as a flop. Now, if you come within 4 inches of me, don't make contact, and I lay down, that's a flop. But if you dip your shoulder into me, you know, I don't care if it's at 50%, 75%, or 100%, and I go down, that's an offensive foul if I'm in a legal guarding position. I don't see that as a flop.
But do you see flopping as a problem, like Boogie's talking about? If, like, the fines obviously have been implemented, is it something that we should try to eradicate from the NBA?
I don't think it's unique to the NBA. Like, I think flopping is an issue in the NFL. I see these quarterbacks now,
sure.
They get hit, they throw themselves down, they have a flag. I see soccer players flopping, like,
all the
you
time.
Know, it's ridiculous. So I think flopping is a cultural thing. I think, you know, unless you're going to fine every single time, and the NBA has been terrible with it. They've been awful. Like, their flopping is purely subjective. Like, there's no way to quantify, like, how strong Danny Cannell is. Mm-hmm. So, like, if this bottle of water hits Danny Cannell in the chest, he shouldn't flop. But, like, this cup full of coffee is enough to make him fall down. It's purely a subjective thing. You can't find on it. So, dude, get over it and play basketball.
I love it.
Can I ask you about maybe your most famous flop?
Yeah.
The Manu one?
The Manu flop. That was a double flop.
Double flop.
It's a yes. Double flop.
It's there's was, video of that on YouTube. That,
yes. That was one of those where, like, I know he's gonna flop, like, because he brought that ish to the NBA.
Right.
There wasn't a whole lot of, like,
these Europeans blaming the international players.
No, Manu, and great. We shared an agent. Like, I love Manu, but he brought that, like, head thrown back soccer flopping to the NBA. So
it's all soccer's fault.
When you get into a battle with him, like, it's like flop or be flopped.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm like, listen, we both at the same time were like flop or be flopped.
So I think I'm okay with it because I feel like it's a nuanced part of the game. And it can become an art form.
It is an art form.
Like, you had it down to if you can do it
Shane
successfully.
Battier, like,
now, I think if you get caught doing it, you should be fined. Yeah. Like, and it's not a huge fine. It's a slap on the wrist.
Right.
But, you know, if you do it and you do it because you don't want guys who are awful at flopping to do it all the time. It'll slow down the game. You'll have calls that are going on. But I feel like it's the same as you said. If I'm a quarterback or a punter or kickers are the worst.
Yeah,
if anybody comes near them, they're like falling down and they grab their legs. They'll fake injuries.
Sure.
I was doing a college game this year at Utah, and the kicker got, like, a guy touched his toe. And he went down, and, like, the medical staff came out. And I was talking to my play-by-play. I'm like, he's coming back in the game. There's no chance that he was hurt. And sure enough, he goes out. But they got the penalty to go against him. I see it like as framing a pitch if you're a catcher. Like, there's an art form. There are little things that are nuanced in sports that I'm okay with. They've kind of become a fine-tuned part of the game that if you're good at it, you can use to your advantage.
Agreed. Here's the beef, and you touched on it just a second ago, and this is what I always had a problem with was the flop, and it probably happens to Boogie a lot, but Manu and I had another situation where, you know, something happened and Manu flopped, and they went back and looked at it. I think it was like an elbow or something, and when that happens, I can get kicked out of the game, right? If you flop on an elbow, and Boogie is typically involved in stuff like this, you flop on an elbow that wasn't meant to hit you, and you sell it like you just got your nose broken, and they kick me out of the game and fine me, that's money out of my pocket.
Yeah.
So I don't mind like trying to gain a competitive advantage with selling a call. Like, that's all well and good, but when you're getting people kicked out of games and potentially suspended and taking food off of their plate, and you know damn well it wasn't like that, like, I don't agree with it.
This website that I've never heard of, the Sportster, has Raja ranked as the 8th worst flopper of all time.
8th worst.
Now, is that a compliment?
8th best. Eighth
biggest flopper.
Who's number one?
Vlade Divac.
Damn. Could you go down the list real quick? Yeah, I would be just so fascinated to hear what they...
All right, let me go. Vlade, number one. Bill Laimbeer, number two. Manu.
Three,
three. Danny Ainge, Anderson Varejão, Reggie Miller, Derek Fisher is right above you, and then Shane Battier's.
I'm in good company. Yeah.
That is really good company. Good, those company. Are all great players. All right, I think there is an art form to it.
Thank you. What's those, it? What's the website?
Sports.
Shout out, baby.
All right, let's get Debo involved. By the way, Eric has been killing it on social media. If you don't follow us at Kinnell and Bell on Twitter. He's put out some great videos. Some great comments. He's silencing the haters in a way that
kill
I really
him with
appreciate.
Kindness.
Yeah, kill him with kindness and a little snark, a little sarcasm in there too. I have like a defender. I like it because I got somebody watching my back on Twitter. I need that because people either love me or hate me. Most of me hate me on Twitter. Let's get you in here though with some topics. What do you got for us?
Yeah, all right. So Danny, on Friday's show, you talked about the end of your career and how it ended with the Broncos. Raja, you've talked about the end of your career with the Jazz and your guy Ty Corbin. And
shout
how
out.
How things didn't
shout
really
out Ty Corbin.
End well there.
Yeah.
So, Rafael Palmeiro doesn't think his career ended well, but his career ended in 2005, and now as a 53-year-old, he says he's working on a comeback. You guys got anything left?
53. He's thinking about coming. I covered his son at NC State as a baseball player.
Yeah.
His son's playing right now, and I don't know if he's in the big thing. He's in the minor leagues. He had the sweetest swing ever. I think he might be able to do it.
Oh, my God.
As it could, because of baseball, the uniqueness of baseball and the DH.
You're killing me.
All you have to do is hit. And he's got one of the smoothest swings ever. When I was little, I used to be so jealous because lefties always look better. But Rafael Palmeiro had the prettiest baseball swing I think we've ever seen. Him and Ken Griffey Jr.
Julio Franco, the oldest hitter in MLB history, 49 years old.
See? I'm telling you, there might be a chance.
Okay, that's my baseball, like, lack of baseball awareness coming in. But I'll tell you like this. I got invited to play in a pickup. I don't play basketball a lot.
Right.
I play golf if I'm playing anything. A pickup basketball game on Sunday morning at Weston Regional Park. We were playing 4-on-4 half court. We played for about 2 hours. I couldn't walk for 3 days. Like, I couldn't walk for 3 days. My feet hurt. I threw my back out a little bit. My groins were sore. Like, I've got nothing in my
I think the NBA is one where it'd probably be the hardest sport to go longer because it's the most taxing on your body. The NFL, the only positions you'll see do it are quarterback because you can protect yourself, punter, and kicker. Like, and maybe a long snapper. But any other position, I don't think you'll ever see a guy challenge like Brady's going to or Blanda, some of those all-time longevity records that are out there. So, but Palmeiro, I think the thing that's interesting about it is because the way he exited the game, which was being suspended for testing positive steroids, everybody and their brother would say, we know how he's doing it.
Right.
Which, hey, you made your bed, you got to sleep in it.
Yeah. Raja, would you ever play in the Big Three if approached?
Would I ever play in the Big Three if approached? Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Did you know something I don't know? Did they approach? I don't know.
No, but the thing
you
about
had a better
it,
career than the guys.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
But see, here's the thing: like, if you just get out of bed and go play basketball, you're going to be sore. But I bet if you trained and slowly started to work your body into shape, you could be a lot closer.
A couple years ago, when Mike D'Antoni got the job in Houston, like, I congratulated him and so on and so forth, and we had a couple conversations. Like, and I started training again to get back in shape, and it started. It took me about a month to really get over the soreness and the hurt, and then I got to a good point. I still don't think it was good enough to play in the NBA, but my body wasn't hurting anymore, so I could probably play in the Big Three if I trained for it. I just enjoy being around my family and stuff now. Like, so I don't know how I want to do that.
Right.
LeBron James and the Cavaliers going well. but it wasn't a little bit ago, and Isaiah Thomas wasn't on the court, should return maybe January, maybe right around the All-Star break. But to envision playing with Isaiah Thomas, which LeBron James has not done yet, he's been playing 2K to kind of simulate it.
Is I love it.
A viable option.
I love it. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it's viable. I don't. But I love the fact that LeBron will look for any competitive edge and advantage he can get, and thinking outside the box. I don't think enough people do that. Everybody is stuck in just the way it's been, and this is how it's got to be. It's not. Like, you take every opportunity to try to be ahead of the curve, and he does that, and so. These games are so good. Now, I said to my dad a couple years ago when we were sitting there watching my sons play college football from EA Sports, right?
Yeah.
And they were teaching them, there's a tutorial, offensive tutorial, and it was teaching you how to run a zone read, like what you're looking for, the defensive end crashing down. And it was teaching them, what do you do against a cover two, like what routes will be open against. Like, that is stuff that is invaluable to kids. Like, you, so yeah, there are advantages to playing those games, and he might have gained one.
I think in football, I've talked to some college guys. Teddy Bridgewater, when I talked to him when he was at Louisville, he used to say he played, you know, Madden or what, you know, any other video game to try to help him in this thought process. I am with you. I think, I don't know if it helps, but I mean, we rave about virtual reality. Now,
right.
That's different. I don't know if you've ever put one of those on.
Those are dope.
You are like you're in a huddle, and you are actually seeing the exact same things. Now, the video games, Ark, they have come a super long way of what you're seeing and what you're playing. But I think the virtual reality, at least you can drop back. You can maybe make a throwing motion.
Right.
If you're just hitting buttons, I don't know how that translates to, all right, I'm going to see that guy and throw it and
right.
pull the trigger that way. I think it's a little bit different.
Well,
but
I mean,
playing the looking at the playbook,
maybe not for a pro, but for LeBron's, like, I don't know if it'll work. He may have found it. Who knows? But like, for a kid who knows nothing about football, let's say, right, as a 7-year-old, if he's learning through EA Sports what throws conceptually should be open against said defense, like, I just, when we played back then, like, there was none of that. Like, no one taught me what to look for. You know, when I saw like this in pick and roll, and they'll teach you that in like an EA Sports game.
Are you a gamer?
I'm not.
I was never either.
No.
But a bunch of guys in the NBA and the NFL, a lot of professional athletes, that's all they do in the hotel. Like when we had curfew, it wasn't because guys were out partying. It was because they were all playing games.
I know.
Like, it was in the rooms.
I knew I was old when I got traded to Charlotte, and we had our holiday party, and it was at the downtown, like, big movie theater, and I went in there, like, not knowing what to expect, and MJ had rented this whole place out for guys to play video games on a movie screen.
That was
and
it.
I was like, I'm too old.
Were you guys that ever paid attention to your Madden or 2K
no.
ratings?
No.
I know mine were pretty embarrassing. Like, I was super slow, and I was average. Like, it was kind of like average, maybe to below average, which was probably fairly accurate. I was never one that was going to get all upset that I didn't have a 98 because I kept it real.
Well,
all right.
Well.
Raja's flop rating, though,
yeah,
we know that
has
was off
to be
the
off
charts.
The charts, yep. For sure.
All right. Good to see you back, man.
Oh, good
to be back.
Back.
Glad you're feeling a little bit better. That's a wrap for Monday, episode 10 already.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're in the double digits now. Make sure
you
head over to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and download. Leave us a 5-star review. Ask us a question on there. We'll get to those Wednesdays. Usually we're going to get to those questions. Ask us anything you want. Probably not something about the NBA or the NFL or college football. Ask something about our careers, anything you want to know. You can find us on Google Play. We've had a lot of people say, hey, where else can we find you? Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, pretty much anywhere there are podcasts, you can find us. Make sure to follow us at Kanell and Bell. We got a huge show Wednesday. Special guest lined up, the Lane Train. Lane Kiffin going to join us from Florida Atlantic on Wednesday. So make sure you check us out. And thanks for listening. See you.